Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we've got another interesting day in the markets. Got a lot to talk about there. We've also got news on Giga Berlin, news on Tesla Energy, an update on the 4680 Model Y teardown from Sandy Monroe, earnings from Ford, and a couple other items as well. All right, so we knew today in the markets was going to be relatively volatile. We started off pretty strong following the after-hours performance of Microsoft and Google that we had talked about yesterday. So the market's rising up until the Fed statement, and then once we got that news, which we'll talk about here in a second, continuing to rise and even jumping up a little bit after that, with the NASDAQ finishing up the day 4.1%. So huge day for the NASDAQ. Tesla following along, finishing up 6.2%. Obviously, mainly macro-driven there. That's a big part of why we've been spending a lot more time on the macro environment lately. It's volatile right now. It's having a huge impact on all companies. So Tesla closing the day at $824.46 after that move. So let's take a quick look at the actions from the Fed, and even more importantly, likely in terms of the market reaction, comments that were made by Fed Chairman Jerome Powell during his press conference. The Fed did end up increasing interest rates by 75 basis points, now putting the federal funds rate between 2.25% and 2.5%. So that was in line with most people's expectations, though some were expecting a 100 basis point increase, so probably some relief in the markets from that higher rate increase not coming to fruition. And then in terms of outlook, during the press conference, Powell said that, quote, "While another unusually large increase could be appropriate at our next meeting, that is a decision that will depend on the data we get between now and then," end quote. So although that might sound, without context, like a little bit of a non-statement, it is a little bit softer of language than has been used the last couple of meetings from Powell. That softer language was echoed in a couple of other comments where he said, quote, "It likely will become appropriate to slow the pace of increases while we assess how our cumulative policy adjustments are affecting the economy and inflation," end quote. In essence, these things seeming to point to the Fed's preference for smaller incremental increases in the interest rates if possible, but of course leaving the door open if inflation data continues to come in hotter than expectation. In the meantime, though, Powell did refer back to the June SEP, or Summary of Economic Projections. That doesn't get updated in July, but he says sometimes those can be out of date really quickly. In this case, it still feels relatively relevant, and he referred to the committee's expectation that interest rates towards the end of the year would fall between, 3.25%, 3.5% or so, which he seemed to imply at this point was still pretty reasonable. And if that ends up being the case, that would suggest another 100 or 125 basis points of increase to interest rates by the end of the year. We do have three more Fed meetings, though. Those are in September, November, and December. So across those three meetings, you're talking maybe 50, 25 basis point increases even, if the year-end target does hold. Of course, all of this can change, and it can change very rapidly, but that's kind of the takeaway from today. And earlier today, after the Fed meeting, when the CME group probability tool was working, looks like it's kind of messed up right now, but when it was working earlier today, probabilities for a lower increase for the September meeting had increased a bit. So I think that covers the Fed meeting pretty well. The other notable comment from it was Powell saying that, quote, "I do not think the U.S. is currently in a recession," end quote. He was basing that primarily on strength they are seeing in the labor market, but again, it's not the Fed that makes that call. That is the National Bureau of Economic Research. I'm sure there will be more conversation on that tomorrow when we do get the first estimate for Q2 GDP. The other major macro news that is coming out as I'm recording, so I don't have a ton of information on it yet, but Senators Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer have announced that they have agreed to a deal for a bill that would include changes for tax policy, energy policy, healthcare, and I'm sure some other items that were originally a part of the Build Back Better plan. And this is where changes to the EV incentive program were originally housed. So we may soon have some more concrete news on what's going to be happening with EV tax credits. Again, this is just coming out, but should be pretty big news. Hopefully we'll have more details on that tomorrow. For completeness sake, did just want to mention too, Meta earnings, because we mentioned that earlier this week. They did report a little bit below expectations, earnings of $2.46 per share versus $2.59 estimated, and revenue about 0.5% below estimates. Apple and Amazon earnings coming up tomorrow. All right, moving into the update on Giga Berlin, we've got a report here from TeslaMeg.de on Tesla's planned production rate targets at Giga Berlin for the next few months. They claim this information is from sources inside Giga Berlin, but obviously still kind of have to treat this as a bit of a rumor. They say that, quote, "Since this Monday, employees have been working in two shifts again, and the next intermediate goal is to produce 1,500 Model Y per week. As TeslaMag.de learned from an informed person, further new hires are planned and production will be doubled from October," end quote. All right, that's a really dense statement. There's really four pieces of information in there. First, production did restart on Monday as expected. Second, two shifts. We've had conflicting rumors on that. There was a previous rumor that we had talked about suggesting that there would be a third shift starting as early as July 4th. Since then, there's been no confirmation of that, so it does look like Tesla is indeed still just doing two shifts. Fourth, they mentioned the production target of 1,500 Model Ys per week. Of course, that would be higher than the peak that we had heard previously of 1,000, but probably a little bit lower than what we may have hoped for after this downtime for an upgrade. And then the fourth and final piece of information, that production will be doubled from October, so the first month of Q3. Later in the report, they say that from the beginning of October, a significant increase in personnel is expected again, saying that this is when they would be planning to add the third shift. That would be targeting for 600 vehicles per day or 3,000 per week for a 5-day week. So it looks like at least at this point, that sixth day that we had heard multiple rumors about may not be happening yet or may not be planned yet either. So if this is true, we'll probably end up seeing a little bit less of a jump in Q3 production than what many would have hoped for. But if they can get to 3,000 by October, that would put them in a very good spot for Q4 production. And if they could sustain rates like that, it wouldn't really put the production ramp too far behind what we saw for Giga Shanghai, maybe a quarter or so, which is really what we've been watching for, right? Whether it's comparable to the Shanghai ramp just delayed by a quarter, or if it's ramping at a much slower rate than Shanghai. Anyway, for the more immediate term, let's say Tesla can get to that 1,500 vehicle per week rate and they can sustain that through August and September on average. That would yield about 13,000 vehicles, and with the downtime in July, that's not going to add a whole lot to that number, so maybe 1,000 or 2,000. That maybe gets Tesla up to 15,000 for the quarter, but that does depend on them getting to that 1,500 per week rate pretty quickly. Hopefully we'll get some updates on that over the next couple of weeks now that Tesla has returned to production. All right, next we've got an update from Sandy Monro on their ongoing teardown of the new 4680 Model Y. They are still having a lot of trouble with that foam that is packing those 4680 cells in there as a part of the structural battery. Monro started off the video talking about how taking this apart is a miserable deal, but they did spend a good amount of time at the end of the video explaining how Tesla would still be able to relatively easily recycle all the materials in the 4680 pack. Elon had already reiterated that, but Monro agreeing. Anyway, because Sandy was previously traveling, I think this is the first opportunity that he has had to comment on the pack on a video, and he said, quote, "I'm dazzled by the technology that Tesla has cranked out on this," end quote. And then he added that every time you look at something from Tesla, it looks like this doesn't even come from the same company. That's a huge, huge statement because iteration in the automotive industry has historically taken a long time, and Tesla's DNA, as evidenced by what Monro has seen over the years, is such a stark contrast to that norm. Monro said, quote, "At the end of the day, it seems like they don't have a limit on their capacity to invent," end quote. So even before they're able to access these 4680 cells, proving quite difficult for them, Monro and associates are already quite impressed with a number of things that they are seeing with the structural pack. Obviously, they haven't had a chance to access all of the individual cells yet to be able to count them, but they did make an estimate. They're seeing grids of 34 by 6, and they're seeing 4 of those. So their estimate right now is 816, but possibly up to 828, which would be based on what Tesla had previously displayed at the GigaFest events. So more to come from Monro on that, and we'll keep you updated as they continue with that teardown. Next, we'll move on to an update on Tesla Energy. This is coming from Naoen, who Tesla's partnered with, of course, on a number of battery projects in South Australia. Naoen today announcing that one of their projects there with Tesla, the Hornsdale Power Reserve, has received authorization to provide inertia services to the national electricity market. So you may remember we've talked about inertia in the power grid before. The easiest way to think of that is that a source of power generation could be used to turn a turbine to generate electricity, and if that power source were to be interrupted for a little bit, the turbine wouldn't stop spinning immediately, so it'd still be generating electricity until whatever is causing it to turn starts applying that force again. So that generates inertia, and that inertia is important to the power grid, but with solar and batteries, for example, you wouldn't have that natural inertia, but it can be programmed to emulate that same effect. So that's what Tesla's been working on with their virtual machine mode, and after testing, that is what they have been granted approval to be using at the Hornsdale Power Reserve. Naoen says the system is able to supply a volume of inertia equivalent to 2,000 megawatt seconds, or about 15% of the anticipated need in the South Australian network, which supplies more than 1.7 million inhabitants and 150,000 businesses. So short version, it's a nice step for grid stability in a partially renewable grid. All right, last couple of things here. First, we've just got a really quick update on the whole Elon-Sergey Brin affair story that Elon has denied. Not something that I enjoy covering, but still feels somewhat relevant. So I just wanted to pass along an update that the lawyer of Sergey Brin's wife did make a statement on this, saying, quote, "Make no mistake, any suggestion that Nicole had an affair with Elon Musk is not only an outright lie, but also defamatory," end quote. Elon on Twitter had said that as a public person, he didn't really have much of a shot at suing for defamation, but maybe as not a public figure, she may have a claim. All right, last item then, just want to take a quick look at Ford's earnings reported today. They did beat expectations pretty handily. Adjusted earnings per share came in at 68 cents. That was well ahead of analyst expectations at 45 cents per share and significantly up from last year, but last year was kind of an outlier in terms of being a poor quarter for them. Just 12 cents of earnings per share adjusted last year. Revenue kind of tells that story. Came in at just shy of $38 billion in revenue for the quarter, up from $24 billion last year. Also well ahead of analyst expectations at about $34 billion. So pretty big beat here. Ford stock definitely shot up in after hours after this report. They did also report net income, GAAP net income of $667 million. That might seem quite low. The reason for that is because that includes essentially an impairment or a mark to market from their investment in Rivian. That was a $2.4 billion hit to their GAAP net income. Obviously not a cash cost on that, so pretty similar to how Bitcoin would affect Tesla's earnings. Some differences there, just skipping over that for the sake of time. Please don't harp on me for that, but I do think it's fair to look at earnings adjusted for that. Anyway, they say that earnings before interest and taxes, so EBIT, came in at $3.7 billion. Remember yesterday we talked about GM's earnings, and Ford earnings here are a stark contrast to the declines that we had seen from GM. GM was at $2.3 billion EBIT. Even with Ford's relatively strong number here though, Tesla did still surpass it from an EBITDA perspective, so even including depreciation and amortization, which would lower that number for Tesla. Tesla still coming in ahead of Ford. Still definitely a strong report from Ford. Again, I think they seem to be managing this a lot better than what we have seen from GM so far. And then importantly, kind of last point, like GM, they did also reiterate their guidance for the year. I haven't had a chance to listen to the earnings call yet, obviously, but we'll see if any other important statements come out of that. Otherwise, that will wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. Also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, July 28th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.